The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Some of the heart-wrenching sights and sounds coming out of Kabul yesterday. That's the scene right outside the Kabul airport. That's the one little piece of real estate in Afghanistan right now that the United States Army controls. That's it. And even the news media, the propagandists in the news media are coming out and saying it's just chaos. It's out of control. You have that little girl there sobbing, saying that the Taliban are coming for me. A little girl. These are not people who think that the Taliban has evolved over the course of the past few decades into a more compassionate and inclusive movement like the UK military chief believes. No, they know that these guys are monsters. They know it. And they're doing everything they can to try to get out of this terrorist state. That's what it's turned into. And it took less than 2 weeks for this to happen. And the United States allowed it, or perhaps caused it purposefully. We'll come to that and much more in the opening segment here. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining our growing audience. We broadcast this show live every weekday, 11 a.m. in the Central Time Zone here in the United States. And we also broadcast through our partner, CRN Digital Talk Radio. The Channel 3 on that platform goes into 11 million homes around the world. And that takes the audio version of this program into those homes. The video version is offered exclusively at our website, thetrumpet.com. And you just go to thetrumpet.com/live, and you can get to this show every day. You can get to the podcast that we post soon after the live presentation. We still do have our weekend show, although we haven't plugged it as much of late. It goes out to a radio station in Phoenix. In the last few weeks, we've been a little too busy to create a new show. So some of it's just been pieced together from Friday's show mainly by our producers. So in any event, if we get some new content and produce a sixth program for the weekend edition, we'll certainly try to remember to let you know so that you can either listen to the live stream from KFNX out in Phoenix or see it perhaps later on our website. Well, we're 2 days into the new school semester, so lots and lots of classes going on. A little less time to prepare all of this content for the radio show, but my assistants have been busy pulling together quite a few clips and content that we hope we can get through today. Sights and sounds, as I said, from the Kabul airport just yesterday. And on the same day, you have the fake president. He's in this interview with George Stephanopoulos of ABC. And listen to what Stephanopoulos is talking about what happened on Monday. People hanging on to a C-17 transport military plane, hanging on to the outside of the plane as it was lifting into the air and then falling to their deaths. That's all happened this week. And listen to how Joe Biden responds to this questioning from George Stephanopoulos. This is clip 3.
But we've all seen the pictures. We've seen those hundreds of people packed into a C-17. We've seen Afghans falling.
That was 4 days ago, 5 days ago.
Who says this? That was 4 or 5 days ago? Well, for one, the interview was Wednesday. The people were falling off the plane on Monday, so it was 2 days ago. But leave that aside. Who just brushes it aside, these horrific scenes, and says, look, that happened a few days ago, as if we're completely beyond this now. Everything's perfect. Well, look at the footage and the sounds. Look at the girl sobbing for someone to rescue her from the Taliban. The Taliban are coming for me, she said. And yet there's your illegitimate president. He's away at Camp David for 5 days, 4 or 5 days. He comes back for a disastrous speech on Monday. And then there's some tweets suggesting that he's off to Delaware for a long weekend. Where are they? I heard a Fox report yesterday saying Secretary of State Tony Blinken, he was out of pocket for 3 days, or at least nowhere to be found as far as the press is concerned. And then you've got Biden, whether it's Monday's speech or then the short speech he gives yesterday, and no questions. He just takes off. Here's what he said in his speech yesterday at the White House. This is clip 5.
Quite frankly, it's a tragedy. There are people who are dying and who will die who didn't have to.
It is a tragedy. But he's not talking about the tragedy in Afghanistan. He didn't even bring it up. People are dying. People are going to die. People are going to suffer. And there he is. There he is, the illegitimate president. The last days of his illegitimate presidency, it sure seems like. And there he is going on about COVID-19, day 520 or 30 or whatever it is, and lashing out at red states, lashing out at Republican governors because they're not making little children wear masks. And meanwhile, little children just outside the Kabul airport are begging for someone, anyone, to rescue them from murderers and rapists. That little girl knows she's going to be forced into a marriage and live a miserable life in her remaining years. As I say, heart-wrenching, gut-wrenching. It's not like the United States can solve all the problems of this world, but just step back for a moment and look at the world. Look at where we are. Look at the dangerous and perilous times that we're in. Look at the violence. Look at the misery. I talked just this morning, I'll get to it in the second segment if we have time, my father and his new coworker letter, that goes out in the next couple days, I believe. But he talks there about establishing a relationship with the Father, our Father in heaven, and how that God wants us, as we do that, to remember the law. As it says in Malachi 4 and verse 4, remember the law of Moses, go back to the fathers, go back to your forefathers, and go back to those laws. God is our lawgiver, and the law is there for our own benefit, for our own good. It's there to help us. It's there to save us. It's there to protect us. It's there to ensure our happiness and joy. Why, oh why, as Mr. Armstrong asked, why can't man accept this? Why must we fight against God and his law? Why must we be hostile to the laws of God and act as if the law is the problem? It's lawlessness. That's the problem. Skip ahead to clip 7 from yesterday.
This administration is always going to take the side of our children.
Well, not if those children live in Afghanistan, or if they're the ones living in cages down at the southern border. They like to talk about compassion. They like to talk about children. But they're sure ignoring a lot of them right now. They're so concerned about little children that they want them to be masked up, maybe double masks. an upside-down world. Look, there's all kinds of fecklessness and ineptitude on display. And we can make a small point out of that, I suppose, here in the opening minutes. But I want to come to something more serious and more significant than even that here in just a moment. First, though, listen to Jake Sullivan. He's speaking, I believe, for the Pentagon or the State Department, I forget which. But here he is admitting, basically, that the U.S. is relying on the Taliban. They're relying on goodwill from the Taliban to ensure safe passage for many of these Americans that are trapped in a terrorist state. This is clip 10.
We're in contact with the Taliban to ensure the safe passage of people to the airport.
In other words, the Taliban have control. They, like the Wall Street Journal brings out, they may not have taken actual prisoners yet, but they are holding the United States government hostage. They've surrounded the Capitol. They're in the Capitol. They're surrounding the airport. They're deciding who gets in and out. Right now, they're letting some of the Americans in, and they're keeping a lot of the Afghans out, the ones presumably that they're going to kill as soon as the last troops leave. And as to why they're letting Americans in, well, just think about what must be happening behind the scenes. There he is saying, we're talking to the Taliban. They're also probably giving them anything they ask for. They've already left all of this military hardware. It's just fallen right into their laps. And probably to Iran and Pakistan as well. Here's the propaganda media reporting on the case. So the State Department says, look, we're talking to the Taliban. We're insisting that the Americans have safe passage. And then here's how the media, well, you saw it in the opening montage. And the media, for once, they're actually reporting some truth as to what's really happening on the ground there outside of Kabul airport, clip 11.
Well, the U.S. Embassy now says that it cannot guarantee safe passage to the Kabul airport. Let's go.
The Biden administration has said that they are relying on a commitment from the Taliban to allow for safe passage to the airport. But as you can well see, that is not the case.
Well, listen, there's several things that we heard from the National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan, yesterday that just aren't lining up with the reality on the ground. And then what he also said was he insisted that the United States had planned for all contingencies, including the rapid fall of Kabul. And if this is contingency planning at its finest, then I don't know what to say here.
But down at the airport where the evacuations are taking place, it's total chaos.
For those Americans still in the country, a safe exit from the airport guaranteed, but the journey there has to be attempted at their own risk.
These Taliban fighters are a little upset with us,
so let's keep going.
We decide to leave and head for our car. The fighter takes the safety off his AK-47 and pushes through the crowd.
Stay behind him.
You can see that some of these Taliban fighters, they're just pumped up on adrenaline or I don't know what. It's a very dicey situation.
Suddenly, two other Taliban charge towards us. You can see their rifle butt raised to strike producer Brent Swales. When the fighters are told we have permission to report, they lower their weapons and let us pass.
That's as close as you were able to get to the airport. I mean, this is what people are dealing with just trying to get there.
Yeah, and Anderson, keep in mind, we're a Western film crew. We're a Western news organization. We get special treatment. What we experience there, sort of running the gauntlet to try to get near the airport, that's like a very different version from what Afghans are experiencing. The lack of clear information, the rumor mill is in overdrive. There's hysteria. You have Taliban fighters with whips, with guns. You have U.S. and U.K. soldiers who are not allowing people in. You have mixed messaging coming through. through about what kind of paperwork you need and how you can get on a flight and where you can go. I mean, it is just an absolute mess. And we heard President Biden say yesterday in his comments to ABC News that this is not a failure. And I think a lot of people outside that airport, particularly those taking the kinds of extreme actions we're just talking about, would like to know, if this isn't failure, what does failure look like exactly?
Of course it's a failure. It's worse. It's surrender. It's surrender. This has been decided, this outcome. Laura Logan said as much with Tucker Carlson yesterday. We'll get to that clip in just a second. But there's your propagandists in the media, at least for once, getting a few things right. Listen to the Biden spokespeople, though, and these are mostly military people, and we got into that somewhat on yesterday's show. Just the childishness, the lack of leadership, the lack of courage. Not even really formulating a sensible plan. These are individuals heading up the military in the UK, or in this case, here in the United States. And listen to this montage. What you're about to hear, just think about the people stranded, trapped in this terrorist state. Does this really bring them comfort? The message coming through from the State Department, coming through from the Pentagon? This is clip 9.
The time frame of a rapid collapse, that was widely estimated and ranged from weeks to months and even years following our departure. There was nothing that I or anyone else saw that indicated a collapse of this army and this government in 11 days.
Do you have the capability to go out and collect Americans?
We don't have the capability to go out and collect up large numbers of people, Barb.
Did you not see the possibility that the Afghan security forces were not up to this fight?
We continue to work with the State Department.
Well, first may I just say that I commend the President for the action that he took. It was strong, it was decisive, and it was the right thing to do.
Yesterday, the Taliban held a press conference where they claimed they intend to allow women to work and study. The United States and the international community will be vigilant in monitoring how any future government in Afghanistan ensures the rights and freedoms that women and girls in that country have come to expect.
A couple of key statements there. You had Lloyd Austin there. He heads up the Pentagon. And he's admitting we don't have what it takes to go in and rescue Americans. He's talking about the United States of America. He's talking about the United States of America that could, if it had the will to do it, if it wasn't being headed up, and I'm talking about the puppet master here, by an imposter, a traitor. How easily and how quickly could they just utterly destroy this Taliban army? But they won't do it. And there he is saying, we can't do it. We can't do it. You are on your own. And then there's that lady at the end talking about these Taliban press conferences. They're putting them on every day. The international media has more access to the Taliban than they do to Joe Biden. He's gone missing. He comes back in town for a sit down with George Stephanopoulos, and then he's off again. Or if he does give a brief speech, it's about COVID. There have been reports that have come. I mentioned yesterday that he hadn't even talked to a world leader. I think he finally got around to that once last night. But there have been reports of world leaders trying to get a hold of anyone that they can't. They've even called Hillary Clinton. She's not even in his government. This is worse than chaos. It's worse than failure. It's an attack. It's an attack on the United States of America. Wall Street Journal says the problem in the U.S. military now controls only the Karzai International Airport with about 4,500 troops. Americans, foreign nationals, and some Afghans who managed to make it to the airport are able to board flights to depart. But Americans and Afghans on their way are on their own, rather, in trying to make it to the airport, which means getting past multiple Taliban checkpoints in the city and the surrounding airport perimeter. See, they've got to go through the Taliban to make it through to those jumbo jets. They've got to go through the Taliban to make their way to the airport. And the United States government has made it clear, we're not going to get in there and create any kind of corridor for safe passage at all. You're on your own. I read the statement to you from the State Department yesterday. It was in all capital letters. We can't protect you. We're just the United States. How far have we fallen? How far? This is from CNN this week as well, clip 8.
Kylie, our crews on the ground reported absolute madness at the Kabul airport, violence by the Taliban, gunshots fired into the air. Is there any sense of any kind of organized effort right now at the airport to prioritize getting Americans out of Afghanistan, getting these Afghans who are in the pipeline for these special immigrant visas out of Afghanistan?
Well, Jake, what we're watching is the State Department try and apply some sort of organization to a situation that is, frankly, totally lost control right now.
Totally out of control, says CNN. Now, that turn against Biden, that started in haste on Monday. And we played clips for you, I believe, on Monday's show, Tuesday, the montage, all the media. They're gang tackling Joe Biden. They're actually shouting him down right at the end of speeches, like they used to do to President Trump nearly every time, even though he would stand there and take questions all the time. I mean, just look at the comparison. And of course, Donald Trump, he's been making the rounds. He knows. He knows that this is a fake president that's on the way out. Now, how messy it gets in between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Whether Kamala's in there for a brief appearance or what, I guess we'll soon find out. But this is a man who knows he's vulnerable. He knows he's been exposed. And who knows how much longer he has there in the White House. It doesn't seem like, judging by his stint at Camp David and then now Delaware, it doesn't seem like he even wants to talk about this. Or if he does, as I say, he comes back to the White House and talks about it as if it's just perfect. This is exactly what we drew up. Listen to a little more from his interview with George Stephanopoulos yesterday, clip 2.
When you look at what's happened over the last week, was it a failure of intelligence, planning, execution, or judgment?
When you had the government of Afghanistan, the leader of that government getting in a plane and taking off and going to another country, when you saw the significant collapse of the Afghan troops we had trained, up to 300,000 of them, just leaving their equipment and taking off, that was, you know, I'm not, this is that, that's what happened. That's simply what happened.
So it's their fault, in other words. And then Stephanopoulos goes on and says, well, but have you seen the images around the airport? That was 4 days ago. It was 4 days, George. George, it's totally different now. It's so much better. We've got control now. Skip ahead to clip 4.
So you don't think this could have been handled? This actually could have been handled better in any way? No mistakes?
No, I don't think it could have been handled in a way that we're going to go back in hindsight and look. But the idea that somehow there's a way to have gotten out without chaos ensuing, I don't know how that happens. I don't know how that happened.
So for you, that was always priced into the decision?
Yes.
Yes, yes. We planned for chaos. We knew it was coming from the start. Okay, so let's take him seriously for a moment and then begin to ask some deeper questions here. If you plan for this, then what are we actually talking about here? It's as if this was designed, this chaos. He said so. I mean, people are picking apart that soundbite from yesterday, saying, come on, you can't possibly say this is a success. You can't possibly say this is exactly what you were expecting. Well, so what if it is? What does that suggest? What does that tell us? This is from the Wall Street Journal. It says General Milley was also pressed on why the military had abandoned Bagram Air Base in July. Bagram has two runways, while HKIA has one. That's the international airport that they're holding at the moment. The general said he didn't have the troops to protect Bagram and the U.S. Embassy, given the rapid troop drawdowns ordered by President Biden. General Milley said his orders were to protect the embassy as a priority, and the military did, well, I mean, to a point, until Saturday. The journal says, mark this down as one of the biggest mistakes of the Biden withdrawal plan, if you can call it a plan. Holding Bagram now would help speed up the evacuation and create more room for Afghans and others as they await departure. General Milley ducked a question about whether retaking Bagram from the Taliban is an option. That means it's Mr. Biden's call, says the journal, and the president wants this dreadful mess behind him pronto. So if he wanted it behind him as fast as possible, why wouldn't he just retake Bagram Air Force Base and provide air cover and give these stranded people, these prisoners basically, safe passage to get out of the country? If you want to get out, okay, let your citizens out first and then get the military out. Who does it in reverse? Unless they're planning for chaos. Never let a crisis go to waste. Did you know that Barack Obama freed the Taliban leader who engineered the takeover of Kabul? Yeah, remember the Bo Bergdahl case? All those Taliban fighters that Barack Obama let out of jail. Terrorists. Hardened criminals. Obama returned them to the battlefield. Who's Obama fighting for here? He did all that evidently to get back Bergdahl, who was a traitor, basically. A traitor. So he makes the way for the Taliban to have some good leadership. Some good hardened terrorists to head up the operation to retake Kabul. It's a pretty interesting little wrinkle to this story. Here's another story Richard sent yesterday. Fears Taliban will take advantage of high-tech arsenal worth billions that the West donated to Afghanistan. Why would the U.S. military just give billions of dollars worth of military hardware, ammunition, guns, tanks, helicopters? They couldn't retreat a little bit slower in order to take all of that U.S. taxpayer-funded hardware back to the United States, or at least to some of the air bases that we have all around the region. No, they just left them there. Why would they make that decision? Listen to journalist Laura Logan. I mentioned her being on with Tucker Carlson yesterday. This is her take on the chaos in Afghanistan, clip one.
What they want you to believe is that Afghanistan is complicated. Because if you complicate it, it's a tactic in information warfare called ambiguity increasing. So now we're all talking about the corruption and the this and the that, and there's all these complex parts. And in this case, in Afghanistan, this comes down to the fact that the United States wants this outcome. Whoever is in power right now, whoever is really pulling the strings, and I don't know that, they could do anything they want to change this, and they're not. And you see that on the southern border. You see that with critical race theory. You see that with the violations of big tech. You see it with, I mean, in a thousand different ways, you see it all around you.
Indeed, the United States wants this outcome. The United States, with its communist government in place, this is what they want. They could do any number of things to change this, but they won't. And so Lloyd Austin comes up to the microphone and says, we can't do it. We cannot rescue our people. Sorry, we just can't do it. Can't do it or won't do it. The United States of America, it wants this outcome. You look at the history with Antiochus. He's the puppet master, remember. He's allied himself here with the Taliban. And throughout his administration from 2009 to 2016, he was firmly in the camp of the mullahs in Iran. They had a big uprising in 2009. That was in the first year of Obama's administration as president. And he sided with the mullahs. Even as the mullahs unleashed this brutal crackdown on their own people. Notice this from America Under Attack, my father's booklet from 2013. He said, America has done nothing helpful about Syria with its witch's brew of WMDs. We really have done nothing in Libya. We won't even go in and fight for our own ambassador and his American supporters. We won't speak out against what's happening in Libya. In Egypt, after that nation had peace with Israel for 30 years, we helped kick Hosni Mubarak off his throne, and we would not speak out against Mohamed Morsi, essentially declaring himself Pharaoh of Egypt and a bitter enemy of the Jewish nation. My father said, can you explain these decisions with any logic? Can you explain this thinking? Many people can see that these are disastrous decisions, but we must understand that this isn't simply the result of ineptitude on the part of this administration or naivete about how the world really works. We are seeing the after effects of a calculated, aggressive, satanic attack aimed at weakening and ultimately destroying the nations of Israel, starting with the world's most powerful nation. Here comes the world's most powerful nation with an announcement that we can't help our people trapped in Afghanistan. We can't save them. We can't do it. Laura Logan is right. This is the outcome the United States has chosen. This is the outcome the United States wanted. There's a thousand different ways that the United States could change the outcome right now, right now, this moment, today. But it won't do it. And as my father says in America Under Attack, I mean, this is something worse than ineptitude or fecklessness. This represents an attack, an audacious attack. This is the Antiochus spirit siding with the Taliban. That's what we're dealing with here. And Satan's behind it all because he wants to blot out Israel. It says here, the more time that passes and the shorter Satan's time gets, the angrier he grows. Now he has been revealed. So anybody ought to be able to see him and the crises he's causing, especially in America, Britain, and Israel, but also throughout the world. Further on in the booklet, he talks about how that the devil's doing everything that he can to sink the United States. He talks also about the Green Revolution or the Green Movement in Iran, and how that Obama just turned a blind eye to it. He was working out deals with the mullahs before he even came into office back in 2008. We've exposed that on this program. He's allied to the mullahs. He's allied with the terrorists in northern Pakistan and now the Taliban. And they're all working together. You've got the Sunni-Shia differences. But still, when it all works together to bring down the great Satan, Sunni and Shia come together. We saw that leading up to 9/11, did we not? That's when Sunni and Shia, they're bitter enemies if you leave the great Satan out of it. But if this can bring down the great Satan, well then, that's so much the better. Hey, we'll work with you. How much of that military hardware is going to end up in Iran? America Under Attack. It says, just a couple years ago, tens of thousands of people demonstrated against the government of Iran, and the Obama administration said nothing. What's wrong with these people, my father says. This, too, is an indication of Satan being cast down and exerting his influence at the highest levels. Every decision they are making in foreign policy and just about everything else is dangerously wrong. And we need to prepare ourselves for more terrible decisions. Well, we're certainly seeing that come to pass. As I've been saying all week, tomorrow's news today, I mean, that's from one of our booklets, but I'm sure the material was in our Trumpet magazine before that. Subscribe to it. If you haven't subscribed to it yet, become a subscriber. You can call toll-free 1-866-930-3024. Call our operators today and learn tomorrow's headlines today because of God's prophetic insight, because of God's inspired word, because of the sure word of Bible prophecy. Speaking of the Trumpet magazine, Brad McDonald had a piece back in 2015 on Barack Obama, America's Chamberlain. He called him. He said here, Mr. Obama has told the New York Times that the Muslim call to prayer is one of the prettiest sounds on earth at sunset. Standing before the UN in 2012, he said the future must not belong to those who slander the prophet of Islam. Well, he sounds like he's more supportive of radical Islam, or at least Islam, if you want to leave radical out of it, okay, but it sounds like he's more supportive of Islam, the movement of Islam, than he is the United States and the Judeo-Christian ethic on which the United States and Great Britain were founded. It says virtually every foreign policy decision or action the Obama administration has made has emboldened Iran and other radical Islamist regimes and organizations. We had that in the Trumpet in 2015. That was while Obama was still in office. That was before Donald Trump came along. Can you see why the forces aligned against Donald Trump were so fierce and deranged and obsessed and angry and violent? Every foreign policy decision or action the Obama administration has made has emboldened the terrorists. And now look at what we're seeing in Afghanistan. Do you think the Taliban have been emboldened? They're behaving as if they absolutely know the United States is not going to return to the Bagram airfield. I mean, reporters are asking Lloyd Austin and others, how about if we did this? Can't do it. We just don't have the power to do it. Sorry. This represents more than gross negligence or ineptitude, like my father said. It's an attack. It's a communist attack on the United States of America. It's Satan the devil trying to blot out even the name of Israel. This is from CNN, writing about the Green Movement from years ago. Says Obama gave remarks on the situation. He said he was watching news from Iran, but it's up to the Iranians to make decisions about who Iran's leaders will be, he said, adding that we respect Iranian sovereignty and we want to avoid the United States being the issue inside of Iran. The same thinking today. Look, let the Afghanis decide who they want. We want to avoid being the issue. We're out. We're out. Hey, you can have all of the military hardware as well. And then we'll just plead with Taliban. Look, please at least keep our people safe. Or at the mercy of the Taliban. The United States of America, held politically hostage by the Taliban. From CNN years ago, it says, asked why he would not spell out potential consequences for Iran over its behavior, the president replied, because I think that we don't know yet how this thing is going to play out. I know everybody here is on a 24-hour news cycle. I'm not. An analysis for CNN.com said Obama was attempting to balance realism with idealism. He's just like the same thinking in that UK military chief. Look, we don't know how this is going to play out. We got to really assume that Taliban, they might come around. They might actually include little women, little girls. They might actually allow little girls to get an education and not be raped for the rest of their lives. We're just going to try to extract ourselves out from Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan. Fine, I understand the public sentiment of not going out and sending our boys to build up all these nations, nation building and such. But as I said the other day, the United States has military bases all over the world. You have one strong military base in the heart of Afghanistan, problem solved. But they won't do it. They can't. They can't because they have sided with the Taliban. If you can believe it, they're allied with the Taliban. They gave the Taliban all of the machine guns, all of the tanks, all of the helicopters, even some planes, some fighter planes. What a victory this is for terrorism. What a defeat. What a shameful defeat it is for the United States. But as I've said, what an attack. And it continues. America under attack. You're listening to Stephen Flory, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to give us some feedback, let us know what you think about the program. Email us, td@thetrumpet.com. I was just pausing there because I wanted you to include your name, where you listen from, where you come from. That's nice. And then your listening habits. Those are always good things to hear as well. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
One may blind his eyes to existing facts and trends and say the world cannot get any worse than it already is. Or, if we just ignore the conditions and don't worry, perhaps they'll go away. But these conditions and trends won't just go away. Not unless they are caused to go away. The scriptures of the Holy Bible, the inspired revelation of the Supreme God, have foretold today's world conditions and trends, and give us the advance news of coming peace on earth, of universal prosperity, of happiness and joy, of veritable utopia. This is the good news of the world tomorrow, and it is absolutely sure. This coming world is vividly described in our booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow. What it will be like. Bible prophecy explains in detail how God will intervene to save mankind from destroying himself. Jesus Christ will return to earth, putting an end to the rule of man and restore God's government on earth. To learn much more about this prophesied utopia, please visit thetrumpet.com.
Trumpet Daily.
In 1 Corinthians 4, the Apostle Paul says to the brethren at Corinth, he says, in Christ Jesus, I have begotten you through the gospel. That's an incredible statement to make. This is God's apostle telling the people of God, I've begotten you. I'm like your father. I'm a father figure. And of course, Paul was pointing the brethren of God, the children of God, to the Father in heaven, God the Father. Mr. Armstrong often spoke about how brethren coming into the church during his ministry, that they were coming in either directly or indirectly through him. He had this long ministry, and God really taught him the doctrines of God. One tiny doctrine at a time, one big doctrine at a time, but over the course of many, many years. And then someone coming into the church decades later, I mean, they had quite the stack of books, booklets, literature, articles, and they could come right up to speed through the writings of Herbert Armstrong. He was like a father, like a spiritual father to the brethren of God. My father has this coworker letter coming out. I mentioned it in the first segment. But he's talking about Malachi 4 in this letter where it says that God would turn the hearts of the fathers to their children and then the hearts of the children to their fathers. And my father says here in the coworker letter, this is why we have educational programs for our young people. We have to do everything we can to help turn the heart of the fathers to the children and vice versa. And help the families with that. He speaks of the ministers and just how important it is to help families grow stronger, help children turn their hearts to their parents, and help the fathers turn their hearts to the children. That's the foundation, really, of any strong, stable society or civilization. We see a total breakdown in the family, particularly in the Western nations. And then no wonder we have such weak and inept leaders, even in the military, where you would expect more strength, more courage. Not so today. Even our young people, he says, need to understand this. That's from the latest coworker letter. It goes out in a few days here. Notice Malachi 4. We'll just pick it up in verse 4. In verse 4, the last two verses, Malachi 4, 5, and 6, those are perhaps the two most often quoted verses from the fourth chapter of Malachi. But my father, he is drawing more attention, special attention, to verse 4, where it says, "Remember you the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded unto him in Horeb, Mount Sinai, for all Israel," it says, "with the statutes and judgments." And in the coworker letter, my father says that we need to put more emphasis on this verse, leading into turning the hearts of the fathers to the children and vice versa. God says to remember the law of Moses, to remember the laws that were revealed or repeated at Mount Sinai. Remember that, you Israelites. God's saying that to us today, spiritual Israelites. Verse 5 continues, "Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord." That's speaking of one that would come in the spirit and power of Elijah in these last days, turning the hearts of the fathers to the children and the hearts of the children to the fathers, building up the family. Why? Well, because God is a family. God is a father. Verse 6, it says, "And he," speaking of that Elijah, that end time Elijah, "he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children and the heart of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with the curse," as it should read. How important is this concept? My father says in the coworker letter, at God's youth camp and God's educational institutions, we teach young people about God's law. Going back to what he said there in verse 4, the law is essential for this church to survive. We wouldn't survive if we didn't keep his law. The college, academy, and youth camps wouldn't survive without God's law. We need the law of God to survive. We need the law of God to thrive. We need the law of God for protection. We need it to fill our lives with joy and happiness and goodness. And so what does Satan do? What does he inspire? What does he inspire even people in religion to do or think? To think that the law is bad, it's negative, it's impossible to obey. Jesus did it for us. That thinking comes from the devil because he hates God's law. He hates it. He's the author of lawlessness, the kind that we're seeing in Afghanistan and elsewhere. It's all over the place. He's the author of all this confusion, all of this suffering, all of this hatred, all of this division, all of this war, disease. We got to get back to the basics here. Remember the law. Get back to this end time Elijah. Get back to this family vision. Get back to the fact that God himself is a family. This is a quote from chapter 1 of Mystery of the Ages, the chapter title, "Who and What is God?" My father's made the point that that's the most important question of all. It's the most important question in the universe. Who and what is God? What is his purpose? What is his plan? It says here, "The billions now living on earth not only are ignorant of the most important knowledge, who and what is God, they seem not to want to know. They are willingly in ignorance of this most important knowledge and relationship possible in human life. Astonishing, but true. It says, and why have humans been willingly ignorant of man's most important knowledge? Why have humans been willingly ignorant of man's most important relationship? Listen to this. It says, one explanation only is possible. All nations have been deceived. They've been deceived. Let me just come back to this statement I read over. They are willingly in ignorance of the most important knowledge and relationship possible in human life. As I was telling the students this morning at a forum, this is why you're here at God's College. This is your number one objective. To work on your relationship with God, the most important relationship possible in human life, that a human being made from the dust of the earth, but made in the image and the likeness of God, Genesis 1:26, that a human being can establish contact with God our Father and actually develop, with God's help, of course, and with God guiding our thoughts and our prayers and our study of His Word, and actually develop a close and intimate relationship with our Heavenly Father, our Maker, our Creator. Look at James chapter 2. James 2 and verse 18 in the Revised Standard, it says, but someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith apart from your works, and I by my works will show you my faith. You believe, verse 19 says, that there is one God. You do well. The demons also believe and tremble. See, the demons also believe in God. So does the devil. Satan the devil believes in God. They even tremble. They are aware of God's power. They know that God's more powerful than they are. They believe in His existence, but they won't obey Him. Lucifer, who became the devil, introduced lawlessness and sin into this world, and this is why the world is the way it is. This is why our nations are struggling and suffering the way that they are. It always comes back to sin. It always gets back to the law. Lawlessness. The law, like my father said, that's what holds everything together. That's what protects us. Nothing would work without God's laws. In Mystery of the Ages, Mr. Armstrong talked about, you know, proving these truths long ago, and I mean, he came to a point where he accepted God's existence, but then he went on further in his study and thought, okay, if God made it all, if we didn't evolve into what we see today, but if God made it, why? And where is His authoritative word? Could it be in some of these other religious texts, or is it actually in the Holy Bible? He didn't just stop at proving God's existence. He started to then plow through a lifelong study of God's word, and he started living it. And his relationship with God just kept getting closer and closer and closer. He said this, I began to realize a new fellowship and friendship had come into my life. I began to be conscious of a contact and fellowship with Christ and with God the Father. He goes on and says how that when he read the Bible, when he studied the Bible, it was God talking to him. And then when he poured out his heart to God in prayers, he was able to speak with God. And what a relationship that came out from that. What fellowship, true Christian fellowship. That's where it started. For Herbert Armstrong, and then look at the work God was able to do through that man. This is what does it say in Mystery of the Ages? It's the most important knowledge and relationship possible in human life. It's a father-son relationship. It's a family relationship. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly want to thank you for joining us on today's show. We'd love to hear back from you, td@thetrumpet.com, if you'd like to send a short email. And thanks again for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.